The views expressed in our episode are ours alone and do not represent any other organizations. Our episodes discuss internet crimes against children and cases that involve the exploitation of children and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, we don't want to do anything to scare your children. That's the last thing we want to do. We don't want to scare anybody.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Catfish Cops. My name is Tony Godwin. I don't know where the hell I'm at. My name is Tony Godwin.
My name is Brandon Poore. What a start. You can tell we are end of the day today.
Yeah.
And guess who's joining us again?
Welcome back, the infamous superstar.
You got to talk about it.
I got to tell that
superstar
story.
Superstar applesauce, Jennifer Mulliken.
Jennifer Mulliken. Recently retired.
Retired from the FBI. So, you know, she was like, I can't come on. I can't even come on your podcast and talk about it. And we would bug her. And then we had to drag her down here to talk to us again today because she refused.
And I remembered two stories. So one was a case we worked, and it was pretty early on. And it's a case that we have done a study on in our don't remember what case number, but we had a gentleman who was interested in showing up for a meet with what he thought was a young boy. And Jen was a part of this case, and we had I brought her into this pretty early. And so we were getting to the point of the meet of the takedown. And so where we had set up, and you'll remember if you've listened to the episodes, because the it's one of the couple of times I use an actual decoy. I used an officer who looks really, really young, and he's really kind of small framed and all that. And we talk about that at the episode, but he's in a field and he's got a little soccer ball and he's kind of just going around kicking a soccer ball around, waiting for this guy to show up. And Jen and I are kind of sequestered about, what was it? Maybe 50 yards or something.
Oh, 50 yards, yeah.
Into a ticket booth for a football stadium. And we both have binoculars and we're watching the UC guy and the undercover guy and the whole kind of thing. And one of the funniest parts, and I don't know if you remember this or not, but there was a elderly gentleman who was in that booth with us, who was sort of the stadium, the stadium is named after this guy, right? And he's sort of infamous in my city. And so that was just his little office of where he stayed. So I don't want you to get the thought that we're in like this squeezed into like a telephone booth. This was a pretty good size ticket booth and it had an office in it. And he's in there and boy, he was just enamored with Jen Mulliken, and he's just talking and chatting it up to her.
Episode Bewitched with Jennifer,
and he was just talking to her, and he's an old guy with an old Texas drawl, and he was just chatting her up the whole time, and she's looking at me like
he thought you had a sexy voice.
He's like,
like you did my suspect.
He's like, she's like, what the hell have you gotten me into? And then that poor fool showed up, and we were able to take him into custody. And then the flip side of that, another funny part of that is, and we've mentioned many times, like we would get a case from where we are from a municipality, and we would file a state case to make an arrest and we'd get him locked up and everything. And then Jen comes in and does up all the federal paperwork and then gets a federal indictment. Well, then we have to then rearrest. And so do you remember the rearrest of that particular person?
I do.
So please share with our listeners how that sort of played out.
Oh goodness. to execute this arrest of this individual, we brought 15 agents.
At least.
20 agents.
Probably 20.
Probably 20.
And part of our process is you brief before you execute the arrest warrant. It's very early in the morning, so we expect this individual to be asleep. And because it's in Tony's town, Tony was helping us with early morning surveillance. So he's sitting in a car in close proximity to the house, and we're at not too far away, but the staging location, briefing the case up. And then Tony starts texting me because he's seeing activity at the house. So again, there's 20 agents. We're putting our vests on. We're getting all of our accoutrement on to go do this arrest. And the guy walks out to walk his dog. And Tony rolls his window down and is like, hey, come here for a second. And the guy greets Tony. And Tony's like, dude, you're under arrest. And then here we come rolling all up. And Tony single-handedly has him in custody. And so the 20 agents that showed up that day got nothing to do.
Got a disappointment.
I remember as he walked up to me, I was chirping on y'all's radio because you gave me one of your radios and said, hey, if anything happens, hit the radio. And nobody was answering. And I remember when I told him to stop, and the first thing he said was, hey, Tony, are you bringing my computer back? Well, and then I said, remember when I told you that this probably could go federal? Yeah. Well, that's today, and you're under arrest. And he grabbed his chest and he leaned against the car holding it to his dogs. And he goes, I think I'm having a heart attack. And I said, oh no, you are not having a heart attack. I'm like, you're having an anxiety attack. And I'm like, be calm. We'll get through this. And then here comes the entire FBI shields and helmets and all kinds of stuff. And
we're not making fun of them.
And Jen is just looking at me like, really, really? And then, it would quickly change because the guy had two dogs on a leash and she's like, oh, puppies. And, and she was right on grabbing the puppies and but that was pretty dang funny.
That was hilarious.
And yes. So there is one more sort of funny thing I want to add. So
I got one too.
I introduced her as Superstar, right? Because I remember there was a show on TV about the FBI and the girl who was the main character in that show resembles Jen. And I remember seeing like, it was almost like the Charlie's Angels pose, right? The silhouette with the handgun in the air and the long hair. And I remember seeing the advertisement for the show on TV. I think I told my wife, I was like, man, that looks like Jen. And so I remember texting her the next day going, hey, Superstar, I didn't know that you had a TV show all about you. She's like, what? And I was like, yeah, I saw you on the show. She's like, shut up.
We have 1,000 stories, if you can't tell. So Jen spent a lot of time investigating, partnering with local agencies. She spent a lot of time testifying. You've seen her on the news, actually. I don't want to tell people to Google your name, but she's testified in some really big cases. And one of them, you know, we don't like using the term child pornography, but one of my favorite is I am looking at paperwork sitting in the gallery of court while she's testifying. And I'm not paying attention really until she says one thing. And then I popped up like almost like a prairie dog coming out of the hole, I think, because she says, and I quote, Your Honor, he had child pornography. And I went, pornography? Oh, no, not the child pornography. And she goes, shut up. I can't believe I did not say that. And since then, right?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Oh, now she's being shy. Okay. So let's talk about, Jen you didn't just do VCAC investigations of just child sexual abuse material and things like that, reactive cases, but you did proactive work, right? In undercover capacities. Can you talk in general? I don't want to give any sort of secrets away or techniques, obviously, but we've talked a lot about with our listeners that we base things on real life. And it's hard to believe that people actually, there are people out there, horrible people that will make their own children or children within their lives available for sexual encounters and things like that. So talk about kind of your work in undercover life, and we're going to talk about your cases, which kind of leads into that as well, right?
So yes, there was an individual on my squad that was chatting as a dad with a child, and he ended up getting a promotion. And my supervisor at the time came to me and said, you're going to be chatting because he's leaving. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I had zero desire to chat. Never done it before. Zero desire to chat. And after quite a bit of back and forth where I'm like, I'm not doing this, I lost.
Kind of sounds like how we got her onto the podcast.
Yeah,
I'm almost not doing it.
And I was given a phone and told to go see somebody and he would train me. And I went and spent like 2 or 3 days. And then he's like, you're trained, go forth and conquer. And I had been trained years before. That was the class that they had sent me to, but that had been several years before. So it was trial by error. And so different from state partners, we have a very close relationship with our prosecutors. And so from the very beginning of any chat cases, our prosecutors are on reviewing whatever we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so since this is one of my first cases, I was very connected with my prosecutor reviewing the chats to make sure that we were doing everything as we should be. Mm-hmm. And this particular individual was pretty aggressive and we gave him what he wanted.
But you've been a kid online. You've been a parent online. Let's sort of give a little background because you're chatting as a parent in this case that you're going to talk about today, right?
I began. That's how my chat began, as a parent.
But what made you decide, like, this is who I'm going to go undercover as? Because, you know, I think that's something that it's a legitimate question, right? That people are going like, no way. Why are you doing that? Why is that even a thing?
Well, I was basically told that's what I was going to do because they had seen cases of mothers offering up their children. And so when I, as a female agent working undercover, that was going to be my persona.
But that happens, right? Like, correct. That's not a, like, you're not making that up. Like,
absolutely not.
And certainly you're not pushing someone to do something that's out of the realm of what happens in real life.
No, that's where everything that we work and develop our personas off of it, our cases that either myself have worked or other partners have worked.
And that warms my heart because we have mentioned many, many times, and I know people get sick of hearing it from us, but that's what we base everything we do on pretty much in an undercover capacity. It's based off of real cases with real kids, real parents who have offered up their own children for these sort of crimes. And, you know, I think the general public just in general, one, can't wrap their mind around the fact that a parent would offer up their own child.
I mean, like, yes, that should be.
That is shock.
Absolutely never happening. But all it takes is a quick search of the news to see. Yeah. I mean, I remember something out of, I think it was Seattle or the West Coast, where a really astute observer happened to be on a plane where she overlooked some guy talking in text form to a mother about sex with her kids. And God bless this nosy observer because she saw it, reported it to a flight attendant, and then they met them and arrested those parties. And it was like, you know, I remember reading the article going, there's like, I know it happens because we do this, but it still blows my mind to believe that that could even be a thing.
And that's one of the training when you go become undercover certified with the Bureau. It's taught by members from not only other undercover agents throughout the agency, but also from personnel at headquarters who get to see a little bit of cases being worked all across the United States. Mm-hmm. So they're taking the knowledge that they learn and then passing it down to us. And then each undercover agent employee, our job is to create the persona that fits best with us. In the beginning, my persona was mom offering up her child.
And that's difficult. I'll be honest. Like I've mentioned before, you know, in many other episodes where I've done it. I've posed in that capacity as an adult offering a child, a family member, but it's just not my thing. Like
they've heard me talk about, right? We've had cases where I'm posing as a parent of a child and we've made arrests and it's not just, a one-off, you know, in 10
years.
No,
not at all.
It is multiple cases like that. I mean, gosh, we've worked those together, right?
And correct.
Where we've had, those cases together, but I know we're going to talk about one of your cases. Let's sort of get into the nuts and bolts of it. It's been a while. We threw this at her, so she's going to try and remember details about this case. But we've given the randomly generated name of Darren, the
motocross guy. Yeah,
his name is Darren in this episode. But who is Darren, and why did he come into your radar at all, Jen?
So, at the time, we were on a particular platform that we were aware of as law enforcement was a platform that was being utilized by child offenders.
We can say it because we've said it before. Craigslist. Okay. Yeah. We say that because Craigslist used to be a place where we would encounter a lot of these types of cases, right?
Correct. And so on that, on Craigslist, we have posted ads ourselves, but in this particular case, I responded to an ad that somebody else had placed. And I don't recall the specifics of it, but we look for certain key terms that they use. And then in my response to that ad, I threw up.
Tony read the ad because he loves reading ads.
I do. Absolutely. And this is, what year was this case?
2017.
Okay. So this goes ways back. And there is a, we'll get to this, I'm sure, but there is a, I did play a role in this case as well with Jen as things sort of unfolded. We'll kind of talk about that. But I remember just as we're kind of getting into this, like just what a creep this guy was. Total creep. Oh, okay. So here's his ad.
This is my favorite part. We're letting Tony read these for a change.
Yeah, here you go. Just for the record, this is an explicit episode and you should not allow your children to be listening. So if you're in the car and your children are here,
too late.
Please
stop it.
Press pause.
Please pause the episode.
Yes. All right. So here we go. It's this is the title of the ad. Have you ever fantasized about daddy eating your pussy, et cetera? M4W,
et cetera. You had an ad, et cetera. What falls under et cetera?
Well, I guess we're going to find out. And then he lists the city where he's from. Now, before we get to the actual body of the ad, let me describe the photo that's included.
It's before we get to the body of the ad, you got to get to the body in the photo.
We got to get to the body in the photo. Ba-dum-bumps. And so we have a male who's taking a selfie in a mirror. He's wearing what appears to be sheer-ish looking underwear. He's shirtless, showing off
kind of tighty-whities.
They're not tighty-whities. They don't look tighty-whities. I think they look translucent, to be honest. Got the old iPhone in his hand. It's from the neck down, so you do not see his actual face, but you do see his manhood sort of in the, you know, the translucentness of his drawers. And so then here we go into the actual ad.
The manhood in his drawers.
Here's the body of the ad. I'm 42, very muscular, clean, educated, and an attractive Dallas professional. I'm looking for a younger girl, 17 to 25, that's been looking for a fantasy with an older man. Let's talk about what you're looking for and see if we can put something together for you. I can also host, pick up, and look for a regular thing. No need to reply if you're a... Oops. Sorry. Hit the wrong button. What have I done here?
Here, I'll finish it.
Oh, no need to reply if you're a guy. Thanks. And then it describes his...
manhood?
No, it describes his body as athletic. It says he's 5'11". He's aged 42. And that was posted in 2017. So Jen,
what caught your eye about this manhood?
Well, two things. The fact that he was calling himself daddy. And at the time there was a lot of cases being daddy, daughter, mommy, daughter. And then the age reference, 17 to 25.
Right. And that's, to be honest, we've talked about Craigslist many times on a bunch of different cases, but that normally would have almost gotten an ad flagged back then.
Because it was under 18.
Because right? It was under 18.
And by a year, but yeah, still.
But still, yeah. You know, and we've talked about it before where when someone, at least when in our experiences dealing with these this platform at the time, if someone were to try to list what they're really looking for, which is, you know, much younger, it would automatically get flagged. And then typically if it said anything other than 18, it would for sure almost always get flagged. So that's just kind of an anomaly that you even saw it. So we're assuming you were perusing things and saw this mighty fine ad and decided to reply.
That's exactly what happened.
And did you mention his manhood?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. Imagine.
So working these kind of cases, we figure out key terms that if you are actually involved or interested in children, you know these terms. And so my response was, I threw out a term. to see if he was into that term. And he responded, yes, he was. And
thus it begins.
Exactly.
So we won't give away that term because that might be a technical thing. But like, if you say certain things like that, for instance, it's not a mistaken like accident. You know, he can't confuse, you know, that it's, you know, the same term as another two or three things. And, oh, I had no idea. Right. That is a very unique thing. You're using terms that are distinctive to exactly what he's looking for that you're going to then in an undercover capacity provide. Right.
Well, and that's just what it is. It's not just one term. It's the term plus the context of the communications we're having, things that he's saying, things that I'm saying, that just builds the case to where some individual would show up to have sex with a child. Mm.
And so then I guess your reply happens. He indicates, yes, I'm on board, and communications take place. Do you remember, and you may not, did your communications stay on this particular Craigslist platform for a while, or did they transition to something else?
We transitioned to a different platform.
Right.
And how goes the follow-up to that? Because, I mean, you know, some people think like, oh, it, you know, you're not driving things and sort of introducing new things. He's equally as involved in this communication, right?
Absolutely. I am very much in my communications, and I'm just read a post from him right now that I could tell he was getting upset because I wasn't answering fast enough. At this particular time, I was communicating with another individual as well. And so it's very difficult as an undercover to maintain so many communications at once. So I see he gets mad at me because I'm not talking fast enough with him. And I remember we got kind of ugly with one another to where my prosecutor was like, "You're being mean." And I'm like, I don't care. Because I did not want to chat. I did not want to work these cases. And so even as mean as I was being to him, that still did not discourage him. Right. He was, and his questions back to me were directly about my child.
Right.
Not just like, oh, you have kids. That's so sweet. I want to have kids one day. No. Like when you say about your child, it is about sexual conduct with your child.
Correct. He's right. Asking the age of my child. He's understanding why I want to be discreet in my communications. He had asked for a pic of the child. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't share pics that early. And then here he's asking what we do together. And what he means is when he says, do you have experience with your daughter? He's not asking if we went skydiving.
Right.
The whole context of the communication when he uses that term experience is he's wanting to know if I've been with her.
Do you remember what age of a child you were purporting to have?
Yes,
or children?
I told him she was 10.
So, yeah, to make it clear to all of our listeners, like, you know, this isn't some age difficult, oh, you know, 16 could look 18 or 15. Yeah, he's not looking for someone who's borderline legal. This is a prepubescent minor child, a 10-year-old child.
So I don't want to give anything away, and we don't want to be very detailed, obviously, about technical stuff, but I do want to ask, what are some things that stuck out in your communications with him? Like things that you're like, oh, that was really, you know, that stuck out, or I remember that today, or, oh, this guy was dangerous.
Well, I think the biggest thing for him is, I'm trying to see the dates of the time frame of this. I think we started communicating at 5 o'clock on that night. And then I'm trying to see within a few hours, he's talking about drugging the child for the first time that they are together because he was concerned about her identifying him. Mm. So within a few hours of communicating with this individual, he's developing a plan that if we get together, he wants the child to be drugged.
And that should be just a shocking revelation to anybody listening.
People listening are shocked and disgusted, that's a normal response.
This is the reality of what really exists in this world. It's funny you mentioned how he was getting kind of twisted because you weren't answering fast enough. And I know, having worked many cases on that platform, they tend to get a little territorial. Once they actually latch onto a somebody and they're actually communicating and they see that there's a path to their sickness, that they're going to get what they want. Mm-hmm. And so they tend to get kind of twisty with you. And I love the fact that you picked fights and stuff, because I've done that many, many times.
And we know this platform's renowned for, you shouldn't trust anyone but me. There's some real crazies out there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's correct. That's, yep.
This and other platforms.
So what do you remember anything as to the motocross thing? Because I have a pretty vivid memory of when I was helping you with this, because there was actually a connection between this particular guy, Darren, and someone within my own agency.
So when you respond via Craigslist, it's anonymized, and that's the function of Craigslist. And so as we're communicating, it's via email and it's anonymized email. So I know right. nothing about him, but he eventually transitions to another platform. And I say, as we transition to the platform, he is bragging. I think he is trying to put his best foot forward for the mom, because he's right. interested in my child. And so once we transition to the alternate platform, I see here in the emails, he's sharing his email. He shares another picture of his face. And I think he eventually shared a picture of, he's bragging about having a pool. So in mm-hmm. these emails before we transitioned, he's very much saying, look how great I am. Look how professional I am. And then once we transitioned to the platform, that's when I learned his profile picture was of him as a motocross racer. Yeah.
And so the connection, she had, you know, told me this investigation was going on, and I think we were doing a little bit of background on the photo and all this kind of stuff. And then it turns out, just a very weird connection, that there's an officer in my agency who grew up with this guy, from like college age, you know, up through, and this guy in my agency was a racer. And he's like, oh, like, I know that guy. and oh, by the way, he is weird. Like he came to me and he was like, I remember him recounting a story with me. And this is, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself as to where this led. Obviously we know this led to his arrest, and conviction, but I remember him specifically coming to me and telling me, he's like, he said, my wife and I were at a function, like a, you know, just a casual function over some sort of holiday break. And he said, a bunch of past racers were there at this same party. And this particular guy had showed up, and he showed up with a younger female, and immediately all the wives in the room were very standoffish. They were like, that looks like it could be his kid. Like she looks so young. And so he recounted and told me, he's like, I literally went to him and said, how old is she? Because she had a drink in her hand. And he's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like questioning him. Cause you know, this guy's now a cop. And he's like, you're not going to contribute to some minor if she's underage. And he swore, Darren, the moto jock, he swore, oh no, she's 18. She's 18. But to this day, he told me, he said, there's no way that girl was 18 years old. He said it made most of the people in the room immediately get away from him and start to distance themselves. And I thought, holy crap, that's crazy.
Well, one of the big things with working these cases, as soon as you throw out that your child is 10,
yeah,
they should disengage. I have been cussed out. I've been told I'm a horrible person. That's right. The appropriate response.
Yeah, sure.
But
I've been reported to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which as I should be, but that's the appropriate response. That wasn't his response. He does admit later on when we go to court, he does say like he has an interest in young, but you know, he of course says 18. Well, this ad was for 17. And then he doesn't blink an eye when we say 10.
Well, let's back up to, so obviously this progresses to a point where he's willing to show up somewhere for this sex act with what he believes to be a child. Explain to our listeners, like, talk about, if you can, like whatever you're comfortable sharing or remember, I know it's been a long time and all that stuff, but, anything significant about that when it led up to that?
Well, when he did show up, he showed up with a Benadryl and a Unisom in his pocket. He showed up with a
cooler.
That's
what we call a clue, right?
Exactly. Especially because it matched the communications. Like, yeah. He showed up with those in his pocket. He showed up with, I believe, alcohol, a little cooler.
Yeah.
So some alcohol for the child. And I believe there was a gift, a trophy that he had won at a race that he brought for the child.
Now, you said he made a comment. I know you told us earlier he made a comment about something. Can you share that? I don't know if you can share that about him saying he should have been maybe law enforcement.
So, again, it's during the communications. The communications are when you really learn the intent of this individual. And he believed that I was a mother that had molested my child and that I had child sexual abuse videos, images and videos of my child. He asked me, are they on a phone? Are they on a laptop? And of course, I said yes. And he said that he should have been an FBI agent because he will show me how to remove those from my devices because the FBI, when they search, they always go for the phone and the laptop first. And so that he was going to be bring flash drives when he met to show me how to transfer the child pornography from my devices. And he showed up with flash drives.
Did he really?
He did.
So he's a giver. He was just going to.
He was going to help me out. He was going to make sure I didn't get caught.
Wow. But that's important. I mean, that's something
that's a huge element. Yeah.
You know, that's not something that we're requesting, but he's showing up with all of the things that match exactly what he's told you. So when he gets there and says, no, I wasn't anticipating having any sort of contact with a child, you know, you're like, but you've told me this and you brought this and you told me this and you brought this. That's a huge thing that shows that his clear intent was to show up with that in mind, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So I don't know if we want to skip forward. And I know that Tony worked it, and so I'm kind of the odd man out. I don't know all of the details of it.
I just remember the court stuff. There was one deal. Was this the I thought it was kind of interesting. There was a couple of things that I remember from this, and I didn't play as anywhere near a role in this as you did, but, you know, got to help you with it. But there was a deal. Was this the one in court when we were talking about the search terms and that's
yes,
that
you
stuff.
Testify as an expert.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yes. And so I remember the first thing I remember is his legal team was these very young female attorneys, which I thought was a little odd right off the bat. And I thought, well, that's an interesting decision. But then it seemed very apparent, like he seemed very enamored with them, which was really kind of weird, sort of off-putting. And then there were some questions about, you know, search terms and all these sort of things. And just watching him in that trial and like his attitude and like he was put out and he made all these like pretty wild claims, I thought, that had no merit or no bearing whatsoever. I thought that was pretty interesting part
of
it.
So I think what was the most interesting about this was even prior to going to trial, he had sent some emails to your coworker.
Yes. And he was, because he had gotten arrested, he was detained, which, you know, what we've talked about in the past is that's the difference in Fed versus state. There's no bond and you're held there until, you know, something moves forward. And he was sort of blindly soliciting everybody in his friend group, like all of like the professional racer type people that he was involved with, like growing up and through college. And it was the whole woe is me. I've been set up by the FBI, a crooked FBI agent and all this kind of stuff. And of course, the officer that I work with immediately was like, bro, look at this. And he's like, you know, I'm not responding. Nobody's responding. I've kind of told our inner circle of friends, like, you know, you're crazy if you, you know, get yourself involved in this, you know, all these sort of things. And so at one point I remember there was like a blog about the whole thing like
this. What was he hoping with the woe is me attitude before trial? What was he?
I think he was looking for like character witnesses. He was looking to sell a bunch of his junk, a bunch of his stuff. I do remember one of the
defense,
yeah. Yeah, to pay help pay his defense. There were, you know, put money on the books kind of a thing, I guess, so he could, you know, get commissary or whatever where he was at. I do remember one aspect of this. Obviously there's lots of legal process that gets filed and the ad that he posted. Well, this was one, I don't remember how many, but remember he had a ton of previous ads.
He had several.
He had, I want to say almost hundreds, and I know I'm speaking out of turn, but
I totally agree with
you. It was hundreds and hundreds of emails. And I do remember from like the transcribing things to go testify for court, the volume of times that he was seeking this type of relationship, which is probably the wrong kind of word to use, but where he was sort of seeking this out to have engage in sexual activities with children. And for him to just come forward with this complete, utter bullshit that I was set up by a rogue FBI agent who set me up and entrapped me.
Numbers. I needed it for numbers. I had a quota I needed to meet.
That was one of his statements. I think you were going to get the FBI toaster that when your toast comes out, it has the FBI logo or something.
Got 10 more cases. So first of all, I mean,
there was one that was actually even worse. I remember it.
Yeah.
He actually wanted somebody to dress up like a child.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And with teddy bears and stuff on the bed or some of them, but those were a little bit before this particular ad, but
yeah.
So the ads, that was what I was going to ask. The ads are about children, not 17 to 25. They're alluding to children.
He had a range of ads. He had ads that were, you could tell he had a couple different personas online. Mm-hmm. And so one was the sort of the motocross world and like trading that kind of, not that material, but like parts and motor stuff or whatever, accessories, I guess. But then there was the whole other side, which was primarily the majority of his ads, which were all geared towards the terminology that, she discussed earlier, kind of the buzzwords that we would look for in these investigations, and just the general, I'm looking to engage in sexual activities with children. Mm. That was the overwhelming majority. And so I thought it was funny when my coworker came to me to tell me about things, and I'm like calling Jen, like, you're not going to believe what he brought. Look at this. Well, then it led to this online platform that was hosting a blog, basically.
Wasn't that after the fact?
It was after the fact.
So let's get, before we, I wanted to bring that up last, but chronologically, Jen, it's unusual. Maybe it's not, I don't want to say unusual. It's just less frequent that you're actually going to trial, right? That it's not every day that all of your arrests lead to a trial, but in this case it did. What goes through your, we don't talk about trial a lot.
Not much.
And I know that you've, done a few big ones, but so what is going into preparing for a trial like this?
Oh, it's intensive. Because you have to go through everything, the ad, the responses, the communications, and it's not just looking through your emails. Everything is forensically extracted. So there's dates and times, and even the reports are huge reports, and you have to put everything in chronological order, and then you have to make the exhibits. And, in this particular case, he showed up with the car. We had to make a map from his house to the meet location because we knew what his defense was going to be. We were trying to present the case for a jury because these are people who don't know what we do.
Right.
And we present a case to the jury about this was not an individual that oopsied and just showed up at the apartment complex.
Accidentally.
Right.
You weren't a rogue FBI coming to find some random.
There's a pattern of behavior long before, leading up to this point. It's literally painting a picture in layman's terms. It's like I sort of equate it to like paint by numbers because nobody's going to know if Picasso's in there doing his masterpiece, being able to tell. But if you had a paint by numbers, you could really tell the story of like, oh, okay. Oh, I see how this is coming together. And that's to me what this really was. It was enormous as far as evidence, overwhelming evidence, extremely clear that this was all geared from him. He set the pace of this entire thing because his mindset was like, man, I've got this and I'm finally going to get what I want, which is evident when you show up with Benadryl and Unisom and wine cooler, whatever it was, the alcohol. I mean,
and flash drives,
like keep in mind, those were items to give what he believed to be a child, to incapacitate a child.
This is to incapacitate a child and to bring home souvenirs of what he thought you had produced of the child, right? So
right.
You go to trial, You have to testify.
Well, even before that, I think one of the things that we always talk about is once he's arrested, the real case starts. Yeah. And in this particular case, I'm reviewing his phone and I see communications because he talks about this in this blog. Like, this was so offensive to him. He couldn't believe that I did this. But in his communications, he's involved in a relationship with another couple, a sexual relationship, and they've had this sexual relationship with the when they bring their child to his house. Right. So my job is to make sure that child is okay. I don't know what happened when the parents pass out or drinking or what have you.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we had CPS do an investigation. Thank God they found out nothing had happened to that child. But he was so livid about that. But that's what we do. Yeah. We don't just take the chat communication, finish it up, and arrest him and be done with it. There's more work that goes on after the fact. And it's looking through his phone. And also while looking through his phone, which ended up being a pretty important part during the trial, is he's bragging to a friend that when he went and raced overseas, he had met a female and he drugged her and raped her. Mm. And that this communication was now several years later, he's found her online. And so that showed the pattern of behavior that this is an individual that drugs women to get what he wants. Yeah. And so he brings that up in this blog later on.
We keep talking about that against him. Blog. Well, we'll go ahead and just mention it. Yeah. He writes a blog. He is, let's just say, as big a fan as Tony and I are of Jen, he is the opposite of 100%. A fan. He hates himself some Jennifer with a passion, and he writes about it at length in this blog.
I'll be honest. The shocking part to me is the fact that he is in federal custody with the ability to do this blog.
And I think we looked into that, and I don't know if he's actually, I think he might send the information to somebody on the outside and they blog it for
him. Who post it for him or something.
Yeah, because
but still, I mean, those words are his words. Like, it's very clear that it's him. However it's getting done, it's just shocking to me that someone who's in federal custody for this type of a crime has the ability, and I guess, hey, you know, it's a free world, it's free speech or whatever. He's entitled to write up whatever he wants. It just blows my mind that he can engage anyone to look at this and buy into it.
Let's just say you're not on his Christmas card list.
Absolutely not. But I think what's most shocking about me is that he decided to go to trial. And I'm like, man, you have to remember what you said to me in our communications. But hey, it's his right to go to trial. He went to trial. All of these communications were exhibits. So it was played over again, just in case he forgot the things that he had said to me in communication. Right. But still to this day, his blog, he leaves out wonderful facts. Like we did, we searched his vehicle. We absolutely found another sleeping pill or Benadryl, something. So that's what he says in his blog, that we accused him of bringing that pill. And that was, he neglects to tell them that he had Unisom and Benadryl in his pocket.
In his pocket.
Right. He doesn't tell them. He brings up this trophy because he tells everybody, oh, well, she told him to bring the trophy, or I told him to bring the trophy. But he neglects to tell him about the flash drives that he brought for me to remove the inappropriate images of my child. He doesn't mention the alcohol. I mean, these communications, like, this is not something that we make up.
Right.
My phone, my undercover phone, is forensically extracted. This is a forensically pure chat. I didn't delete anything. I didn't add anything. And to this day, he swears he was set up.
Yeah.
He swears none of this happened and that I did it for numbers. Because we had to get caught.
That dang toaster.
Exactly.
Dang. Well, and so I want to wrap up with, and I know we've taken a lot of your time. I want to wrap up with how that trial ends. And then subsequently, you know, a higher court chimes in on this as well, right? So, and we'll brag about her because the higher court looks at this case and says, Jennifer is the quintessential undercover communicator, that she did everything so perfectly by the book that essentially she has set the ideal for how undercover communication should be done.
And that is no small thing.
No, and I'm
especially
not,
from the court that it came from.
I'm not exaggerating. That was I know you won't say it, but let's talk about how did this wrap up? And then it went to a higher court and they upheld, right?
So he was found guilty at trial. And then a few months later, he was sentenced to just over 19 years in a federal jail. We don't have parole. So he'll do pretty much all of that 19. And then once you are convicted at the sentence, once you're sentenced, you're convicted and then sentenced, you get to file appeals to your sentence. And he's filed multiple appeals.
And his appeals have been heard by a higher court.
Correct.
And the higher court said, eh.
One of the biggest things I think that I stress from this, and I think it's hilarious, is I was communicating with somebody else. And so he was a pain in my side. Like,
yeah.
And so I think that's one of the reasons why I was so rude to him. But I was so rude to him. I pushed him away so much. I basically told him to F off. And he kept coming.
Yeah.
And that to me is because he truly believed I was the mother of a 10-year-old mm-hmm. and he did not want to miss the opportunity.
Yep.
And that's why the courts have upheld, because I pushed him away so bad and pushed him, and he kept pursuing and pursuing and pursuing. So that's why the court's like, this undercover agent gave so many opportunities to disengage. I cussed him out. I told him, leave me alone. Go away. And he just didn't.
And wasn't he in his 40s?
He was in early his 40s. Yeah. 42, something. 43.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, a near 20-year rap is really good. Obviously, you know, once he completes that time, assuming he completes that time, you know, obviously he's a registered offender and there's some supervised release and all those sort of things. So, you know, you hope it's enough. Obviously, we always want more. But, I mean, at the end of the day, this was as solid of a case as it comes, as evident from the higher court that came down to say, hey, this is the pinnacle of how you should do things, which speaks volumes to what you produced in your time as an FBI agent. What we all know, you know, especially Brandon and I, because we've worked so many cases with you. And so it's been a tremendous honor to sit here and talk to you. We hope that you will come back. We have many, many, many other cases that we hope to do.
She should just come on and comment on all of our cases that we've done, because
she was there for most of them.
She was there for a lot of them.
Yeah, the overwhelming majority of them. And it's just, you know, it's just great. It's you're like a sister I never had, and I'm so glad we got the chance to work together.
I'm like the pesky brother that she never wanted.
Yes, Brandon's the brother she wants to punch in the nose sometimes. She's like, bam.
Yeah, we do have that working relationship where she wants to punch me occasionally, and then she loves me the rest.
Of course, of course. But my story I want to tell is about Tony.
Oh, gosh.
Is because most people notice that I call you applesauce.
Yes, that is true. There is, I think we talked, no, we have never talked about that. So there's,
I don't think so.
There is something happened early on in one of my cases, and I was communicating as a child with some offender, and he...
Let her tell what you said, though.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Well, it was a case that I adopted, and so in part of the adoption process, I'm reviewing all of your chats.
Yeah.
And the first time I ever heard this is the defendant or the offender said something to you, and you're like, promise? And his response was, yeah. And you're like, no, you got to say crisscross applesauce. And right. I died laughing because I'd never heard it before. And the offender responds with crisscross applesauce. Right. And I remember taking a picture of it and sending it to you and saying, applesauce. And you've been applesauce now for 10 years.
She does call him applesauce.
She
every
does.
Time.
And so that's along the lines. I think you were calling me that before I was calling you superstar for your TV show.
And so after it became a joke after that every undercover that we worked, when we threw in the applesauce, or crisscross applesauce, we had to let one another know.
Yeah, I would take a picture of it or send it to you. Got another one. She's like, okay. And then she started doing it on some of her own cases. It was pretty funny. So, yeah, that...
crisscross applesauce became our thing.
That's, that was pretty funny.
So Tony gets applesauce. She can't use the word she calls me.
Not in public.
Not on the radio.
Mixed company.
It's already explicit, so you could probably say it here. Bonehead.
Yeah, a lot. Thank you for being on.
Oh, thank y'all for having me.
And we will drag her on again, I'm sure, in the future. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed a case study. I know we have some fun interviews coming up, and we have more cases coming your way. And then, of course, you know, is it too early to start talking about the Crimes Conference?
No.
We have lots of training. We have lots of things coming up as far as like appearances and appearances. Gosh, like we're, there's no fame here. So, I mean, we're going to speak places and we're going to teach places and train places. So, if you're looking for training or if you're out and about and see us speaking somewhere, I'll be on a panel in a couple weeks speaking about this problem and how prolific
what's,
it is.
Tell them the name of the, what is the, I can see the logo in my mind right here. What's the, Not on Our Watch, right?
Not on Our Watch. Yeah, the Not on Our Watch panel. And that's just a an initiative started by an amazing person here in Texas. And it's really talking about the problem of sextortion and educating parents about the dangers of sextortion. You know, if you think it couldn't happen to your kid, particularly now with what we've seen, the financial sextortion schemes, that's affecting those kids who are the everyday, normal, popular, and, you know, from come from a good family, no red flags for that kiddo first. And now they're a victim and they have a lot to lose. And sadly that sometimes causes kids to do very drastic things. So,
Hey, the last thing I want to mention, and we don't do this very often, but I want to just kind of throw it out there that if you're a listener of the podcast, if you still enjoy what it is we're doing, there's things you can do to really help us. One, you can go rate our podcast on whatever platform that you listen on. You can go give us a review, like give us some comments, go to Google, give us a review there because it does help us. And I know we're not in this to pat ourselves on the back or do this, but it does help kind of keep us relevant in searches that people do for things. And then lastly, we hardly ever pitch this, but we do have a bunch of merch. If there's something you ever want that you think is Catfish Cops related, go hit the website. It's www.catfishcops.com and go to the merchandise tab and you'll see just about anything. And
yeah, we've added a couple things on that. We're working on some guides with an amazing partnership with Prevention Starts With Parents. And we're working on some guides. We've got one on there. We've got a sextortion guide we're working on. Gosh, the busyness of life and work and everything holiday related has slowed that down too much for our liking. But also go to our social media. Like we're terrible at social media. We know that. We've tried. We've said in social media how we're going to keep trying to get better and we're not doing it very well.
We suck at that.
But give us a like. Invite your friends to give us a like, give us a like review, tell people about it, because really, ultimately, it's not about spreading our names out there, but it is about spreading the message
and the awareness,
the awareness, the prevention, all of that stuff. So thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Peace Bye-bye. Out.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Catfish Cops podcast, brought to you by Brandon Poor and Tony Godwin. For additional information and available resources, please visit our website, www.catfishcops.com, and click on the resources link.